Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the rural city more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, I talk to Chico Tanquero Lopez. It's a first for the Guelph Politicast, I think, to have someone on the show who's not yet old enough to vote, but age is not a barrier to activism. And it certainly hasn't been from Chico Lopez. The John H. Ross student has a voice, and he has been using it to talk about Indigenous rights and justice for Indigenous people. And given the response to two rallies he organized earlier this year, a lot of people are looking for someone to put into words and action the raw emotion of losing so many young First Nations people to violence. The voice of the youth is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. So let's start with the statistics. According to StatsCan, Aboriginal children aged 14 and under make up 25% of the total Aboriginal population, and 7% of all children in Canada. To put that in context, the total Aboriginal population in Canada is just 4.3%. In Chico Lopez's age group, Aboriginal youth aged 15 to 24, they represent 18.2% of the total Aboriginal population and 5.9% of all youth in Canada. In 2011, the median age of the Aboriginal population was 28 years old, which is 13 years younger than the median age of 41 years for the non-Aboriginal population. But StatsCan also shows us how we're failing these young people. Almost half, 48.1% of all children aged 14 and under in foster care were Aboriginal children. Nearly 4% of Aboriginal children were foster children, as compared to 0.3% of non-Aboriginal children. In the justice system, 5,642 Aboriginal youths were admitted to correctional services in 2015 and 2016, representing 35% of admissions, which is a number that increased from 6% from the year before, and part of the overall trend of Indigenous people of all ages being overrepresented in the legal system. There's also the fact that Indigenous youths are disproportionately the victims of crime, like Colton Bushy and Dina Fontaine. When Gerald Stanley was acquitted of second-degree murder in February for the murder of Bushy, many people of many races across the country felt anger about the injustice of it. They felt it so much that 170 people showed up on a cold February afternoon in Market Square to express that outrage, and the person that created an outlet for that emotion was a person younger than the 22-year-old Bushy, Chico Lopez. Lopez had to do it again 1 week later, when Raymond Cormier was acquitted of the murder of Tina Fontaine, a case that was so heinous it spurred the creation of the recently extended inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Despite the circumstance, or rather because of them, an activist was born, and in a community that could use some strong voices from Indigenous youth, Chico Lopez and his voice is being heard loud and clear. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we hear from Chico Lopez about why he's active, how he organized a highly successful rally on the fly, and why political organizing might be easier than you think. We also talk about why he doesn't trust the government to deliver on its promises in regards to making life better for Indigenous people, how he hopes to work for real change for Indigenous people, and why he's actually hopeful about the future, and also why his mom might throw some salt in his protesting game. So I caught up with Chico Lopez a few weeks ago in studio. So Chico Lopez, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Perhaps to begin with, maybe you just talk a little about yourself and, you know, your life experience, and though you don't have as much as some people I have in here, but still, you know, you've come here, from Mexico, I think. You hail from Mexico, so.
Yeah, so, well, I'm Chico. I was born in Mexico and in Puebla, and that's where, like, most of my family lives, about an hour outside of Mexico City. Mm. That's where my tribe is, the Tlaxcalans. We even have a state, technically, but, you know, it's a bunch of complicated, like, 500-year-old history.
As an Indigenous people, you have a state.
Well, it's, like, let's say if they named Ontario like Mohawk or something, it's like that.
Ah, okay.
So they took the name and like that's the general like historical ancestral land, but it is an official like indigenous land.
Okay. Nobody wrote it down anywhere.
Yeah, like from what I know, to be quite honest, I'm still ignorant on how Mexican states like govern themselves. So don't take my word on it, but that's what I know.
Okay.
But yeah, that's where I'm from. I'm 16 years old. I'm a high school student here in Guelph and all that.
Which school do you go to?
I go to Ross.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Neve Campbell went to Ross.
Yeah. I don't think I know who that is.
actress, the Scream movies.
Oh,
she's
really?
She's from Guelph.
That's weird. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll know like the drama teachers.
Maybe.
Probably. They're still there. They're old.
I hope they're not listening.
Yeah.
They probably know they're old. Anyway, you know, what brought you to Guelph? I assume family brought you to Guelph.
Yeah, I moved here like 10 years ago with my family and all that from... I think it was Brampton. I don't know. We moved around a lot when we first got to Canada.
Brampton is moving to Guelph from Brampton is a lateral move, I will say. So, you know, let's talk about you sort of came to the fore a couple of months ago when the verdict was announced in the case of the murder of Colton Bougie. Let's call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
You felt very passionate about, you know, that this was something that should be marked, that we should get angry about. I think that's the right reaction, but I do think that sometimes even Indigenous people in Canada, sometimes there's no strength to get angry anymore. So what particularly about that made you angry? What made that you want to take action?
Well, I remember when I heard the story and it was just like, oh, this is no surprise. And I then got angry at the fact that it wasn't surprising me or wasn't surprising anyone, because such cases are so common in Canada, in the Americas, in Turtle Island, all of that. Like, Indigenous people are used to it, and I don't think we should ever be used to it. This isn't normal. This isn't, like, something that should be happening. And I was wondering, I said, because I just started getting involved with politics and activist stuff very recently, like this year, and I was wondering if there was going to be anything done in Guelph for this in response to the trial and all that, and nothing was coming up, so I was like, well, might as well do it myself, because if no one else will, because I went to the one in Toronto and all that, and then I came back, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it, and it came together really well. I was really happy. Then I had to do it like the next week again for Tina Fontaine.
Yeah.
So at least I had some practice, but...
Sad that you need practice, but... you know, you said that this is something you had never done before, so, you know, where do you begin with something like that? How did you begin?
Well, I'm in the Young Communist League here in Guelph, and they're all...
Another organization with a long Guelph history.
Oh, yeah.
Neve Campbell and Communism.
Really?
I don't know. I'm not saying she's a communist, but I mean, if Guelph's known for two things, it's Neve Campbell and communism.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Reading about like the fascists in Spain and all that, lots of people in Guelph went to fight them. But and in that, I have a lot of friends, and I said, well, I want to do this thing, but I don't know what to do about it. So I just asked around with them and other friends I've met through like the whole communist thing. And they're like, oh, well, a rally, you just need a microphone and people. So that's essentially what I did. I went to the Aboriginal Student Center, whatever it's called, here on the on campus, and I talked to this one elder, and she was really helpful. She put me in contact with a lot of people. And I basically just used what I saw at the Colton Bougie rally in Toronto and kind of copied them. And I was really satisfied with how it came out. I think I think a lot of people, like, I was really surprised by how many people came out, and it was just, it was good to see that, like, people in Guelph cared.
Yeah, and I was surprised how many people turned out as well. It's sad that that would be surprising that we would get, you know, a few hundred people rallying to, you know, over the injustice of a dead Indigenous youth would, you know, it would surprise us that it would get the reaction it did. But it's funny to hear you say, like, to be politically active, to hold a rally, all you need is a microphone and some people. And it's, I've sometimes lamented myself. Your memory won't go back as far because you're a young, but you know, this used to be Guelph pretty happening in terms of political activism, in terms of, you know, people getting on the megaphones and rallying people. And I think sometimes we've forgotten it's just that easy. You need a microphone and some people.
So I was like, before I did it, I was thinking, oh, wow, a rally. This is me so hard. It's going to be a lot of work. Like, it's like a concert or something. Yeah. But it's not. Like, if you can just get people to listen to you, they will listen, and then they will go teach others. And that's basically what I think political organizing, the foundation of it should be. Education, awareness, and then building a platform off what you teach, and figuring out something like with everyone together, things like that. But the first step is, like, you know, making sure people know what's going on.
So, you know, what have you been thinking since, when was that, February?
Yeah, this was like early February or something. Yeah,
it's, you know, the issues certainly haven't gone away. You know, perhaps, you know, we haven't had a major event like a verdict or something like that. But, you know, in terms of thinking about keeping the pressure up, you know, staying active, you know, what have you been thinking about?
I think...
you have school, too, so couch that you...
My mom, she's like, no more protests. That's what she told me. Because I would skip school to go protest something. Everyone, all the adults think that's so cool, right? But my teachers don't think it's cool.
Yeah, teachers and mom were always the last to get on cool train, but it's all right. But, you know, considering, you know, outside of, you know, what you can do outside of homework and class hours.
Well, I want to talk with other Indigenous people and put down a foundation that's even beyond the truth and reconciliation thing. Because truth and reconciliation, what the... has been laid out for the government to follow is the most basic of basic things that they could even do. And they're not even reaching that. And I think we need radical change. And I think that Indigenous people should unite in Canada as one large group. I don't know, maybe a union of Indigenous people, the tribes, to oppose the government. Because people think that, like, the reserves and tribes and all that, they think it's just like a race thing. But no, they are nations.
Right.
Controlled by the nation of Canada, right?
And
that's like a big thing. That'd be a big plan. But in the meantime, I'm hoping to I kind of want to be a killjoy on Canada Day. I'm thinking I could protest down at Riverside or something with a bunch of my friends, but I don't know if just, like, you know, ruining people's day would really have them sympathetic. I could probably put up signs like saying, hey, do you know what you're even celebrating? But I think mostly just because I'm in high schools, I can talk to a lot of kids. And so that's what I've been mainly doing. I just try to talk to people. And I guess I'm just waiting around for the next person to die and then we have to start all over again.
Right. It is a tricky balance because, you know, you're kind of joking about, do I ruin somebody's day by telling them, you know, the historical significance.
I was like, oh, I'm going to go... like block off the entrance to the Riverside Park where the Rotary Club, and I was like, that'd be kind of dickish. I don't think people would want that. I could just instead have like a different rally like a few days after Canada Day. Like, hey, do you guys even know what you're talking about?
But it's interesting that you kind of have to be self-aware about that, because protest is by its nature disruptive. You're kind of ruining someone's day. If you're trying to
blocking off, like, I mean, you're bringing awareness, you're catching their attention, but the thing is, in Canada especially, you have to practically beg white people to care. If you say anything like, oh, did you know that the Europeans were bad? They're like, hey, you can't call everyone bad, not everyone. Like, my grandfather was a nice guy, but, like, that's not the point.
Yeah.
No one likes to own up to the bad things that their people or that they're associated with or that they benefit from.
Right. And people mistake attacking the system as being a personal attack.
Yeah.
You also talked about, in your future plans, creating, you know, First Nations as an opposition to the government. And that is... that's provocative, because the attitude, even from, you know, the Council of First Nations is we have to work with the government.
And yeah.
It's an entirely new model you're sort of thinking about there.
Yeah, well, as a communist, I don't think that a capitalist settler colonial state will ever give us anything than just the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's when people praise, like, the 8-hour work day or whatever, now that we have weekends, like, oh, thank your government. No, thank the workers.
Yeah.
Thank the people for fighting this. The government would, if they could, they would have us working 24 hours a day. We wouldn't have anything.
Sure.
But it's always the people that bring forth the change. And I think if Indigenous people want change, we will really have to fight for it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to trust, like, Trudeau or the Liberals or any government, any settler government, to fix the issues.
I did want to ask you about that, you know, when, you know, we've talked about it on Open Sources, Scotty and I, being two white guys and obvious experts on Indigenous peoples. but, you know, Trudeau and the Liberals did bring something to the fore, at least, even if it was just sort of, I don't know, a play, you know, sort of, you know, trying to look understanding, trying to look, you know, that they are addressing the issue, at least acknowledging the issue. But it's been almost 3 years later.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an Indigenous youth, you know, how the lip service thing, it's, you know, how much of that, you know, on the one hand, I guess what I'm trying to get at, on the one hand, we have a government that will actually openly talk about Indigenous issues now. But on the other hand, in terms of the actions, the actions aren't there. I mean, thinking about this weekend, we're sitting here, Keshechewan, they're evacuating Keshechewan again, and that's a yearly thing. Every year, it's like, it's April, it's time to evacuate Keshechewan because it's flooding.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not happening at the rate, I think.
I think part of the problem is just the way that the Canadian Parliament and our government is set up. Like,
yeah.
Trudeau has 4 years, and within those 4 years, he has maybe 1 year to actually get something done, and the rest is just to make sure he gets elected for another 4 years.
Mm.
So that's the, like, main problem. That's why nothing will ever get done. The second thing is that he can talk and talk and talk about how he, like, loves Indigenous people. You know, he can give as many hugs as he wants, you know, cry as much as he wants about it. But then when he turns around and says that he's going to support the building of the Kinder Morgan pipeline.
Right.
That completely contradicts everything. That completely destroys any trust that Indigenous people could have in him.
Because one of the biggest blocks of opposition is the First Nations people. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, it's... He, as far as I'm concerned, Trudeau only cares to get elected again in next election. And he only cares enough to make sure to that, like... Canada has risen from, you know, our impression on a worldly basis. And with Stephen Harper, it wasn't as friendly as Canada's supposed to be.
Right.
Trudeau wants us to be, like, friendlier, you know, pro-immigrant, pro-this and that and the other thing. But then he turns around and sells arms to the Saudi Arabians and builds Kinder Morgan and does a bunch of terrible shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, I shouldn't swear.
This is nothing we haven't heard before.
All right. I just think Trudeau is a liar and very self-concerned. I mean, he's a drama teacher. Of course the dude can act. Mm. He can cry all he wants.
Not that I disagree with any of that, but I've struggled with this myself, you know, as a thinking issue, philosophical issue. But, you know, we're talking about 500 years, over 500 years, going on 600 years of systemic racism. Is it reasonable to think that we can change course in a couple of years and that all of a sudden we just change our minds and we start embracing Indigenous people and Indigenous cultures and we start talking nation to nation? That's, I mean, you can barely get people to change their mind about what type of socks to wear and
you know,
their brand of cologne. It's, people are... it's difficult to get people to turn people around.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it'll take another 500 years to fix the problems of the past 500.
Mm.
I think that, of course, there's no harm in trying.
Sure.
But I think the first steps will be, to have a government or to have a system where we can put aside the time, we can plan for 10, 20, 30 years ahead.
Mm.
It's not just about the next 4 years. I think that... people can change. I think societies can change. We will just really have to work to do it. And like, if it takes another 500 years, and it's a good thing, because at least 500 years from now, we'll have kids, Native kids, that grow up without the racism of their ancestors faced and all that. It's difficult to say what will happen in the future, however, considering, you know, we don't have time machines. But yeah. I think, like, the first steps will be just addressing the core issues that, rather than taking the system down entirely, like, mm-hmm. if that's the end goal, but what mm-hmm. we can do now in the meantime is figure out how would we fix this? What are the things that we have to address beyond just, you know, an apology or whatever? How are we going to fix Native people's living conditions? How are we going to bring Native people to the same economic situations as white people? How are we going to have class equality and shit like stuff like that that really affects Indigenous people. People forget about the class aspect, and I think that's something that I think in Canada we forget about class too often. We don't really think about the Canadian bourgeois or whatever. But yeah, it would definitely be a slow process. It's like the same thing why we haven't seen like true communism or whatever, because that it's a massive societal change, and that's what would need to happen here. And we should embrace the fact that it will be difficult and it will take a lot of effort. But I think that's where the unlearning of all this racist thinking will come from the effort.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just change overnight.
It's so hard though, because I like to think I'm someone who's fairly aware of, you know, issues in the news, but you know, there are things that I hear about and I'm like, my God, things like, you know, what happened in, Thunder Bay with, you know, white people making a sport of throwing things from cars and hitting people, sometimes fatally, putting people in the hospital, that it's a game. It's like Indigenous lives. That's a game. And, you know, I can be as quote-unquote woke as I like.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do we reach those people who are playing games with Indigenous life? And I don't expect you to have an answer to that, but, you know, that's, you know, we're talking about ice skating up a hill with talking about that. Not to bring this down too depressingly.
With just, like, the everyday racist who already does, who can see from just, you know, their own moral standings that, you know, throwing shit stuff at Indigenous people from cars is wrong. Throwing things at anyone from cars is wrong, I think. To be honest, I don't care what we do with them as long as they stop.
Yeah.
That's my idea. If there was, let's say, in the future, some sort of, like, rehabilitation we have for racists or whatever to unlearn that thinking, I'm all for it.
Mm.
But let's say, like, if a guy was to yell at me on the street a slur, I'm not going to take the time to educate him. I'm going to, like, probably beat him down, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I think people struggle with, finding the balance between when do we re-educate, when do we try to help people unlearn their racist thinking, and when do we just tell them to shut up?
Mm.
Like, it's the same with, like, white supremacy. I think that white supremacy can be unlearned. Anything can. Anything can be learned, and anything can be unlearned, but I don't think the Canadian government, as we have it now, is going to put in the effort or any, because, I mean, they'd have to put themselves through whatever program of re-education of unlearning racist ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's so many problems in Canada that are underreported that we don't even know about, that we'll only hear about a few years from now once, like, someone stumbles upon it.
Yeah.
And it's, if anything, it just goes to show that we do need change.
Yeah. Do you encounter, you and your friends encounter much racism here in Guelph?
In Guelph, it's not in my face or anything, but, you know, it's more like the way people talk about Native people. Like, I have an American history class, and all the white kids were like, I feel bad calling them Indians. I don't know if we should do it. I said, just, like, say Indigenous. And this one kid was like, well, it says in the book, like, Indian. Like, buddy, I have a Native pride hat on. Who are you going to listen to, right?
It's true. It's right there in his face. But
I think a lot of the racism I've seen in Guelph has just come from ignorance.
Mm. Which is the type that's easiest to combat, yeah. As you were saying, you know, re-educate people and get them to unlearn about racism.
Like, the majority of kids in Guelph, like high school kids, are white kids. They're not like, they don't really understand the world beyond, white little Guelph and all that. And there's more diversity, of course, coming to Guelph. I've seen like a lot more non-white people in Guelph, and it's nice, you know, it's cool. I'm all for it, of course. It's just, I feel like with a lot of the white people in Guelph, they're just very, they're nervous, if anything. They're like, oh, I don't want to be racist. And that's good. Right. No one should want to be racist.
Mm.
It's just, I don't know how many people truly make the effort to, like, learn.
Right. That's getting at this idea that people hate to be called racist, but...
Oh, yeah.
We'll still think racist things.
It's, yeah.
There's a bit of a disconnect there. They recognize the ugliness of the word, but not necessarily the ugliness of the thoughts.
Yeah, they're, like, more offended at being called racist than the actual actions. Which I think, like, let's say if someone said I was, like, being misogynistic, I'd be concerned. I wouldn't want to be offended. I'd be like, oh, am I?
Yeah.
Tell me how. Like, how can I fix that? I think that's what... A lot of Canadians have to learn that there's nothing wrong with being wrong and being uneducated.
Right.
If you're willing to listen and learn.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are too proud to realize that, I think.
That's interesting because there is something in our society that's like, if you are wrong and society says you're wrong, you must go away or take a time out.
Yeah.
It's not phrased as an opportunity to learn better.
Yeah, like... when I talk with communists, if I say, like, if I have an idea that's probably not, like, let's say it would be a dumb idea, essentially, they're like, oh, that's not a very good idea. I'd be like, okay, how can I improve?
Mm-hmm.
I think in Canada, people are very smug and think that they aren't racist just because, you know, they learned about slavery or, like, they don't see color or whatever, but they're not aware of how... A society built on racism has influenced them, right?
Yeah. Well, saying you don't see color is a lie.
Race is a social construct, but we've been raised to recognize our own social construct.
Right. But I mean, saying that I don't see race is like in the same way, like, oh, I'm a really smart person. You know, you don't have to articulate it in order to to prove that you are this thing that you're saying. Let me ask you this. Do you ever worry about getting jaded? I mean, you're young still. You're 16. You know, you've got your whole life ahead of you. But, I mean, Lord knows it's not easy, especially on Indigenous
men. Like giving up and stuff like that?
Yeah. You know, we were talking earlier about just, you know, giving in. Like, this is the way the world is and settling.
Yeah. A lot of people have done that, I think. It is tiring, you know?
Mm.
It's not, like, that's why I like to keep a good balance. Like, if I go to some depressing, like, sad vigil because some kid got shot by another settler or whatever, the next day I'm going to go and hang out with some friends who, like, I'm going to go have fun and, like, try to enjoy myself. I think there is fun to be had. Native people can still enjoy our lives and fight, you know, for our rights.
Like, mm-hmm.
It's an interesting question. I know a lot of people that get burnt out by the time they're 25 or something. Cause they just go.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm hoping I'm not going to get exhausted and just give up, you know? And I think if I, let's say one day I get a job doing something where I can see positive change from my eyes, like if it's, like, I don't know, social work, something like that. I have no idea what I'm going to do when I'm older, but something... Where, you know, you can help people, at least in the present.
Yeah.
That's what people have to do, I think. A lot of people get, like, discouraged because they don't know whether their actions will affect the future.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have to focus on the present and plan for the future.
Mm. What's the difference, do you think?
Focusing on the present, I think, is thinking about what you can do now and doing it.
Mm.
And then planning for the future is thinking about how will what I do now affect that, you know? Like, if I help this person out, I know, like, let's say you have a person who works with alcoholism on reservations or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're helping these people in the now, stopping alcoholics, and what they're helping in the future is another generation not having to grow up with alcoholic parents and stuff like that.
Mm.
Which is a problem that affects a lot of people on res, off res, like it's like all over the continent, really. I see it everywhere, alcoholism.
Mm.
So yeah, I think dwelling on the future too much can be depressing because you're not you're unsure, right?
Right. You know where you want to go, but you don't see how to get there.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. That's what I think people end up like. People, like, again, back to communism, and people are like, oh, well, I don't think we'll ever be able to achieve this. It's just, like, too much, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no harm in trying. That's the thing.
Hmm. Are you hopeful about the future?
Yeah, I think so. I think there will be good things that come. I think we have come somewhere, at least. You know, now it's an open conversation. Native people have some rights, I guess. It's better than nothing. I'm not ungrateful for that, right?
Right.
I'm not, like, thankful to the Canadian government, but I'm grateful that it's not as bad as it could be.
Right. Right. Progress as an ethereal thing, not as giving specific gratitude to the settlers for finally.
I'm glad I live in 2018 and not, like, 1818 or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Chico Lopez, you keep fighting the good fight, and we'll see you out at the rallies, and all you need is a microphone and some people, and I think that's a good message to take away from today.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And once again, that was Chico Lopez. And since we're talking about Indigenous issues, it seems apropos to remind you that June is Indigenous History Month, and that the city of Guelph will be holding its annual First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Community Celebration on Thursday, June 21st at 5:30 p.m. in Market Square. It's where you can take part in traditional welcome, live music and dancing, a drum circle, food and craft vendors, children's activities, and the world hoop dancing champion, Ascension Harjo. And if you haven't seen hoop dancing, it is a sight to behold. And there's a video clip of it from last year's First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Community Celebration on my Instagram feed at Adam A. Donaldson if you want to check it out. And that's all for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music from the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you very shortly. And until then, see you next time.